Hey there, sweet peas. Welcome back to Friendless. I'm your pal, James Avramenko, back with another interview with special guest, Eddie Torres. Eddie is a Brazilian art student who I met through the queer community here in Vancouver, and it was an absolute delight to chat with. We discuss making friends when moving to new countries, the comforts of kink, how to get into shibari bonding, and so much more. This interview meant so much to me, and I think you're going to love it, so let's just dive right in. Without further ado, here is Eddie Torres, here on Friendless.
So Eddie, you know, for listeners who may not know you, may not be familiar with you, I always love to open the interview with a very blunt question of, who the hell are you?
I am a Brazilian artist based in Vancouver. I don't like to say artist because it sounds so pretentious sometimes, but I've been encouraged by instructors to be, no, say you're an artist if you are an artist, right? Mm-hmm, so I've been trying to say that more often. Beautiful. So I'm an artist. I'm from Brazil, but I'm based in Vancouver, Canada. And yeah, that's me. I don't know what to tell you besides... I mean, I can also say that I'm a bad bitch who loves drama.
What's your favorite kind of medium within the arts? Because I was looking at your Instagram in preparation for the interview, and you know, I was seeing like digital media, film. I also want to talk about like the rope stuff that you do. I know there's a name like Shibari.
Yeah.
I want to come back to that stuff, but yeah, what's your sort of preferred medium within the scope of the arts?
I feel like being such a new artist into place, like I'm finishing school right now. Mm-hmm. I'd say that I'm in that phase of experimenting, but obviously you have your favorites, right? I love working with soundscapes, which is basically sound art. I love working with textiles, creating weaves and crochet. It sounds like I'm an old granny, but it's super fun to do it and just create an entire installations out of like knit and fabric and things that you don't normally would put together and think, oh my God, this is an art piece.
I love that kind of, like finding those really unique, like tactile sensations. I had a friend who was a visual artist who would do all of her art with like cheap Crayola crayons, you know, but she'd create these really beautiful, you know, landscapes and figures and portraits and all these things, but like purposely very childish as well, you know, and it just it created this really beautiful texture, you know, and I love those sort of experimental materials.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. Like I love when people just use just different materials or materials that are not really seen as this super artistic medium, right? And then they create such an elevated art form out of it. Like crayons, we just think of this child's play, but you can actually make such beautiful things with it and mix up that in with like inks and paints and do prints in ceramic in prints in serigraphy with it. So yeah, that's interesting.
You were saying before about your hesitation around the calling yourself the artist. And I think that that's something that really, really resonates with me. And I'm really familiar with that hesitation. For years, I would fight telling people I was a poet, right? I always felt this like shame and embarrassment about it. And I've come to my personal conclusion about like, there's this pressure to when somebody says like, what do you do? Right. What they're asking is like, how do you pay your rent? Right. You know?
Yeah.
And so if, you know, if I'm not introducing you with like how I make money, then I'm a failure. Right. Because it's like, I just turned 36 And if I say I'm a poet and they have no idea who I am, then I'm perceived as like a failure, right?
Exactly. And it's like that capitalism, man, you know. Same thing. I'm a year younger than you. I'm 35 and I'm just realizing right now what I want to do for the rest of my life. And when I first had my first bachelor's degree, I went to university with 17 years old. Like, who that is a 17 and knows exactly what they want to do for the rest of their lives or how they want to make money and make a living? You know, like, it's such a weird pressure that we have it nowadays to put it on young people, right? And I don't understand it. And because of that, also, that's why for so long I wouldn't tell people, oh, I'm an artist, you know, like, because I didn't discover that.
Oh, I love that. And I love the idea that it's like, you know, one thing that I'm really discovering, I think I've talked about it a bit on the podcast, but I talk about it with my therapist a lot. So I think that might be where I get the repetition from, is this idea of when you begin following like a creative path or an artistic path, you can have these like inspirations, right? You can have people who have walked their own path and carved their own path, and you tell yourself you need to follow them. But what you really quickly discover is that like, there is no path, right? There's only your impulse. And so you're actually in the jungle, you're making your own path. And it's terrifying because it's not like, I want to be an accountant, so I just go apply to a bank, you know. It's of course, it's your own path, right? And I really love hearing, I'd actually really love to hear the whole story, if you'd like to tell it, about sort of discovering your artistic process, because I think that that's like, it's always so unique, right?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, back in Brazil, I did my first bachelor's degree in advertising and communications. 17, and I discovered in the middle of the course that it was not something that I wanted. But because of familiar pressure, you have to finish your degree if you started, usually. Back home, at least, it was like that when I was younger. And after finishing my first degree, I went for a second one in fashion design. And I think that's when the seed of me understanding myself as an artist was planted and started to germinate inside of me, of like, because I went to this fashion university where everything was very tactile. We were always going for fabric stores, bead stores, and learning how to sew in a really old sewing machine. So things would break all the time and we had to put it together. So I think that was the time that it was the process of me learning, but I don't think I understood myself as an artist until I moved to Vancouver, middle of the pandemic, as it happens to most people that decide to change their course in life. Just traumatic stress. I decided to just, you know what, I'm going to go for this. I always wanted to. I always at least thought myself of some kind of artistic, creative mind. So I decided to just dive on in on it. And it's been a very, very fulfilling experience and hopefully a successful one.
Definitely.
In the near future.
Was it the program that brought you to the city, or was it the city and then you found the program?
So I moved here because of political questions back home. We had an election in 2018 with basically our version of Donald Trump. And at the time, I was just teaching English in an English school. And I was just like, I had no perspective of whatever to do with my life back home. So it was just like, you know what, this country is gonna be in really hardships right now. I don't know if I want to stay here. So I just got all my savings and decided to just come here to Canada, Vancouver, just because it was not too cold. I realized that
it's still
not really, it's still very cold.
I mean, it's no Saskatoon, I'll tell you that much, but you know, that's
yeah, of course, it's not the prairies, but also for somebody that is from Brazil and from a hometown in the middle of the Amazon forest, where you have 40 degrees year round, it's 12 is already like, ooh. I'm very cold at 12 degrees, and then you get like minus 10 and you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
Anyway, where were we?
You were talking about, so you'd come to Vancouver and.
And so I came to Vancouver because of that. And when lockdown happened, I learning about what was going on back home, I was just like, you know what, I'm not gonna stay, I'll make an effort, I'm not gonna go back, I'll make an effort and stay. And I didn't want to do another business course, which is the death of me, for me.
Yeah,
it's so boring, so full of little things that you have to learn and how to be this and that. And for me, it was just so, so dull that I just decided to go for what I always wanted to do. So I just enrolled myself in a fine arts course. And yeah.
It's fabulous. I love that. I want to kick into that. There's more I want to unpack, but I think I want to jump to one of the core questions just to get us kind of rolling.
Sure.
You know, at the heart of this show, you know, just to sort of like give you some context, and you know, longtime listeners have heard this spiel countless times by now, but you know, at the real heart of this show, the impulse boiled down to this question I had for myself of have I been a good friend, you know, and if I'm going to answer that question, I have to sort of figure out what that even means. What does it mean to be a friend? And so I love putting this question to guests and sort of getting their take on it. And I ask you the same question now of to you, what does it mean to be a friend?
That's a really difficult question for me, because I know that I've been a good friend, but I also know that I've been a bad friend.
Totally.
You know, like, especially when I was younger, I was more immature. I think for me, a good friend is somebody that is just there for you. You know, somebody that just, you know, that even if you don't talk to them all the time, when you do, it's as if nothing had, like, as if time stopped and we're there again. You know, like, I have friends that I don't talk for years sometimes. Like, I have a friend that lives in Dublin, and we've known each other for maybe 10 or 11 years now, and I think last time that I talked to him was maybe May. Okay. And before that was 2 years ago.
Fuck.
And when we talk, we still come back to the conversation as if nothing had stopped, you know? And at the same time, it's always like, if you need anything, let me know. Even if we're not in the same countries, in the same time zones, I will be here for you. I think that's what a good friend is for me. It's somebody that will be there for you no matter what. thick and thin, even if you don't need it sometimes, that person will be there.
You know, I think one of the deeper questions for me these days is this question of like, how do you find like nourishment or like sort of like replenishment from distance, you know? Because my closest friends, none of them live here, you know? And so I find myself at times feeling really isolated and really lonely. And I'm somebody who really struggles to reach out to people, especially when I am in a low and in a depression. And you know, people don't always reach out in turn, you know, recognizing that it's a two-way street, but yeah, it's like it then becomes, exactly, right? It then becomes sort of a perpetual cycle of nobody reaches out and then everyone's alone. And I'm wondering, what kind of things do you do to sort of like take some solace or some comfort in those like distance friends?
This is so stupid, but
love it.
My form of reaching out sometimes is just sending a stupid video from I don't know, TikTok or Reels or a meme. Sometimes just that makes me remind that person, so I just I just send it, you know, because sometimes you don't need to talk, or you don't have the energy to talk, right? Because you're so down. If you have some kind of mental illness and you're in the middle of a really bad episode, sometimes just doing that and that person answers, it's a way of starting a conversation. Even if it's through memes, sometimes that happens too.
No, I think that's wonderful. I think that leads me to another question that I am struggling with a lot. And I think I'd be really interested in your take, because as somebody who's, you know, come from another country, like how, like in your 30s, I find it's always been really hard for me to make friends, but I think it's like even harder now in my 30s. And I'm like, how do you make friends? Like, how do you do that?
I don't even am sure about it, because I think I didn't make friends for my first 2 years here. It was very difficult. First year, it was mostly because you're just trying to stay afloat and just breathing, right? Mm-hmm. But with the whole trauma of the pandemic, it's like, how do you approach people if you can't just be in the same place with them, right? So that is also like a really big problem that put a thing on it. What ended up happening to me, how I made friends, was just Tinder. Apps help. Ended up helping, not so much, but I think so, a little bit. Also, I think that's especially here in Vancouver, where I am based, people kind of don't want to have time. Or they are just so worried about something else that is happening in their lives, like rent prices, for example. And am I going to be homeless or not in the next month? That they kind of like put it in the back burner of a new friendship, because they don't have the energy to put on an effort on that. Some people say that the city can be also very clicky. And I feel like that's a little bit true. But being a Brazilian, and that is, we tend to be a little bit more extroverted than others. Most of my friendships, I think I got them because I just wear people down. It was just like, okay, you're gonna be my friend.
Yeah.
Like, for example, with with Taylor, I guess, at a point that we decided to just be apart, I was just like, okay, but I still want to be friends.
Yeah,
I still like you. We're not seeing each other anymore romantically because we had a fight or mm-hmm. because we had a disagreement, a serious disagreement. It was because we're just two different people that wanted different things.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, we're going to be friends. And I think he said something on like, yeah, sure, okay. But I don't think he was expecting me to message him and be like, hey, let's go out. Let's hang out. Let's go have a drink. And...
because that is sort of the line of like, oh, we're still friends, right? Yeah.
Yeah, there's always that line, right?
Yeah,
we're still friends.
Right, yeah.
Sure, and then you don't talk to each other.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, but for me, it was just like, I think I wear people down and they're like, oh, okay, I guess I'm stuck with it.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
This question of like of sort of shared beliefs kind of leads into this other question I have, which is, you know, I've been trying to expand the sort of like, I don't know what you would call it. Maybe the thesis of the show. I don't know. Because, you know, you hear the term community thrown around so much lately, whether it's, you know, the queer community, whether it's, you know, the arts community, whatever it might be. And I'm really stuck on what the term community means to me. You know, I think I have some sort of like markers that I'm beginning to define, but I remain really stuck on it. And I'm really curious, like, to you, what does community as a concept or as a word or whatever the impulse is, like, what does that mean to you?
It's, it's a loaded question, right?
Big time.
It's like, wow. I'd say the community to me right now here is my friends. My chosen family. Community for me in Brazil, it's mom, dad, grandma, you know, my cousins. That's community for me, like people that I grew up with. Here in Canada becomes my chosen family. I think the idea of community here, especially being from an different queer space in a different country and coming to this queer space in another different country here, it's very difficult, very different. How do I explain this? I think here people from what I see from kind of like the outside is that people help each other more. They have more of an idea of like, you're my neighbor, you're part of my community. You know, like you're trans, you're part of my community because I am a gay man or a lesbian or like even a non-binary person. You know, like everybody kind of like becomes this community thing. And I think it's a little bit different. The concept of community is a little bit different back home. it's not as much like my neighbor is not part of my community.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, while here, I think that it's different because I think people crave friendships and interactions socially. Mm-hmm. Here, so like there is a bunch of communal spaces, like community gardens here, mm-hmm. that you can flourish not only fruits and vegetables and flowers, but also friendships, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's such a beautiful thing here in Canada for me.
Yeah,
it's completely different. I don't know if that answers your question.
It really does. No, there's no wrong or right answer to it. I'm just curious. I'm always really curious. One thing that I like to listen to is like how people take questions in, right? Because these are such open-ended questions. There's no like right answer. It's not a test. It's just like, I love to hear where the impulse takes someone, you know? And I think that that's another mm-hmm. element of like the artistic impulse, right? Is this idea of just like, well, what does it say to you? You know, something I've been really trying to remind myself of is something I used to teach in when I taught theater school was this idea of trying to get my students to stop saying it was good art or bad art and instead frame it as this was art that resonated with me or it didn't, you know, with this, just with the intention of like trusting your impulse without yeah. putting like qualifiers on it, without saying it was good or bad, just saying, well, it led me here, or I lost the narrative, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I love just hearing where it takes you.
Yeah, it takes me to that. It takes me to you mentioning good art, bad art. In schools, the same thing. We support each other, you mm-hmm. know, it's, mm-hmm. which is a very different experience that I had back home a long time ago. Not a long time ago, okay, like 10, 12 years ago, let's say. It was completely different. Like, we had way more like a competition between the small cliques in the classroom.
Hmm.
While here, with different artists in the same studios, learning the same trade, we're like, so much about empowering and lifting each other. So like I think that's also community, you know, like you get together to lift, empower mm-hmm. someone or someone's.
Do you find within community, like, you know, so you've been kind of like kicking the tires about talking about experiences back home, and like obviously you don't have to share gory details if you're not comfortable, but I'm curious about like, is it that like there's more like competition? Is it that it's more like, you know, divided? Like what's the, what I'm hearing is that there's like much more of a, like almost like a sharpness, or like there's much more of a insular pack, you know? And
yeah, it was more my experience. I cannot say for anybody else or how it is nowadays, but like mm-hmm. when growing up, in back home was like at the same time that everybody was friendly mm-hmm. and would go out, have drinks, go out to dance, to listen to music, reunite ourselves to do those kinds of things.
Mm.
When it came on to group or anything related to grades mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, projects,
mm-hmm.
it kicked this competition between all of us, which yeah. was very, nowadays, remembering that, it's very amusing to me.
Yeah. Are you somebody who does, do you like competition or do you avoid it?
Oh, true answer or Miss America contest pageant answer?
I mean, I'd actually love both if I could, with voices and preferably like the posture, but you know.
Miss America competition answer, pageant competition.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't like competition. But in reality, I do love competition. That's the true answer. I am extremely competitive. So I try not to compete with people, even in like games.
Yeah.
Like Monopoly, for example. Such big fights over Monopoly or War.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if like you guys have this game here.
Like the card where you flip the cards?
No. You have a map of the world with different countries and regions.
Oh, like Risk.
Maybe it's Risk here.
Yeah.
I don't know. Back in Brazil, it's called War. I don't know why would you call War in English.
I mean, it's very evocative of what the game is, though, right?
I mean, yeah, of course. And you have those little things, and you have to roll dice, and whoever rolls the biggest, you conquer a country or whatever. It's not the best game, I'd say. But yeah, I would be so competitive. Oh my god, yeah. So. Nowadays, I'm more tamed.
This is the thing, I guess, like, because I find myself drawn to the concept of competition more than the actual execution. I love the idea of pushing myself. Like, I'd almost rather be in competition with myself rather than with other people, you know? And I'd rather be, like, holding, you know, keep pushing myself to a higher standard. Because I find that if I put myself in competition with someone else and then they do better than me or what I perceive to be better than me, then I crumble, you know, it's even worse.
The feelings.
Yeah. Oh. Right? You know, it's like, I just collapse. And so it's like, it's better for me to just not, but then that leaves me feeling kind of stagnant, you know? And so it's like, I wish there was like a middle ground of like a healthy competition. You know, did you ever go to like any poetry slams or anything like that? Do you know poetry slams?
I've never been to a poetry slam here in Canada, but I've been in poetry slams back in Brazil, and I know exactly what you're saying.
I always wanted to enjoy it, but I found myself hating it because I was like, this is awful. Like, this is like, it's so personal and intimate, but you're like scoring me, and it's just like, ooh. And now like that poem that I thought was so shitty did better than me, so I'm like, fuck, you know? Like,
You just start cursing the person in so many levels. I have an actor friend, and never occurred to me asking that from her, but I am curious now to hear your answer and her answer. Like, how do you keep friendships in your choice of work, like for example acting, when you're going for the same parts with your friends? That must be so difficult, right? And it's something that I will eventually have to figure it out too, because if I want to be a professional artist, I will have to go for grants and government applications and bursaries and all of those bureaucracy boring things, right? And I'm going to be in competition with my friends. So like, how to deal with that?
That's a great question. I think the simple answer is that I don't think actors especially, but I think sometimes I think maybe artists in general, I don't think they really are friends with each other if they're in the same medium because of that competition. Like with actors especially though, in my experience, I haven't acted in years, but like I've been in the acting world for a long time and the tension in an audition room is so bizarre because everyone, it's like, you know, like Canadian passive aggressive friendliness, you know, like how everyone like, right. You know, like, you know how like Canadians, everybody says Canadians are really polite, but they're not, they're just passive aggressive. They're actually some of the rudest people in the world, I think, but like, but it's that cranked up to 11, you know, because it's everybody like trying to pretend to be kind of schmoozy and like palsy and chatting each other up, but like secretly they're like trying to kind of like psych each other out, and they're trying to kind of like get each other off their game so that they have a better chance at the role. Like there's a lot of really weird, almost like politics that go into the audition room or like the waiting room, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that when power dynamics especially come into play, like I, you know, at a couple of theaters I worked at, I would be like in the audition room, like behind the table, like auditioning and mm-hmm. like watching auditions. And I'd have friends come in, and if they didn't get the part, it would like put a bit of a strain on the friendship, you know? And it's really made me think that artists, I think, need to be around other artists, but I think they need to be around artists who work in different mediums. Like, I don't think all actors should hang out together. I don't think painters should all hang out together. I think it should be like a painter is friends with a musician, and a musician's friends with a philosopher, and a philosopher's friends with a, you know, whatever, a knitter or whatever, uh-huh. you know? And because that creates cross-pollination too. That creates inspiration and new experiments and stuff. But I think if you're working in the same medium, you then almost instinctively fall into competition, which I don't know if that's always going to be the best channel, you know?
It's very ironic for me because I think, like, as creatives, we're not, my experience with other creatives is that we're not super competitive with each other. We mm-hmm. lift up each other. So mm-hmm. I just want to see how that's going to go in like when it gets for real.
Mm-hmm.
And which is very interesting because, as I mentioned before, back in Brazil, the experience in a classroom university was more of a competition one. Mm-hmm. But every time that one of us would get a chance in the outside world, mm-hmm. and we had like two people from the same place competing together for that, and just one of them were gonna get something, we would be so happy for the other person.
Yes, yes.
Right? Yeah. That's, I think it's ironically hilarious.
Well, I think that comes from a place of security, right? Like, I think that if you're secure enough, not only within your art, but within your sort of standing in the community, you know, or your place in the friendship or whatever it might be, I think that's how you can then, you know, celebrate others, right? Like, it's really hard, you know, to sort of use a bit of like a similar experience, but like it's maybe a little bit of out of left field, is like the idea of like in like a polyamorous relationship, right? Is this idea of like, it's really easy to celebrate a partner's joy if you feel secure in the connection. But if you're insecure in the connection, then it's going to be that much harder for you to celebrate them going off and feeling good with someone else, you know? And yeah. And I think that that's, coming back to the artist thing, that's what money does, right? Like, as soon as you introduce money, suddenly everybody's insecure because suddenly it's there's a finite amount of resources. And so, now I don't get to just follow my impulse and create. Now it's, I have to get that dollar, you know, and yeah. that kills art to me. You know, I think I've said this many times on the show, and I've probably said it around you just drinking, and I've probably said it around everyone else, is that, like, you know, and it's not even that like revolutionary of a thought, but I think capitalism has fundamentally destroyed the spirit of art in the modern world, you know, because they're spiritually opposites to each other, you know. Capitalism is all rigid and art is all impulse, you know.
And it art just becomes commodity, basically, mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. capitalism.
Content, right? You know, we're content creators. Yeah. We're not even artists anymore. We're content creators now, right? And it's just
I hate this word.
Yeah, it's insufferable, you know. And then you're on a timeline because you always have to be creating at a schedule to feed the algorithm and keep your name at the top. And you can't take a day off because then somebody else will come in and take your place. And you just get trapped on the hamster wheel, you know. And that just murders creativity, in my opinion, you know. Speaking of creativity, I feel like maybe I'm bouncing around too much, but I, you know, we brought up something that I'm so fascinated by this. I've been like doing kind of baby toes, you know, dipping my toes into the land of kink and you know, dom sub stuff and I was seeing on your Instagram the Shibari.
Yeah.
Shibari. And I follow a couple accounts who do it, and it's gorgeous. It's so beautiful. It's
incredible.
Right? And yet, and obviously like very erotic and like very like, you know, it really highlights, you know, the physical body. I'm really curious, like what led you into, you know, how deep into that are you and what led you there?
I'm not really deep into it. Mm. What led me there was just curiosity. I followed the photographer's account that I did the photos with. His name is Fabio D'Amata. He does this for a very long time. He, I believe, is in Europe right now, doing a few partnerships with a ballet company in Germany, if I'm not mistaken. Like, they were doing like a performance art kind of residency, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. And I don't even remember how I got into his account. It just appeared for me in my feed, I think, one day. And I started following him, and I just got fascinated because it's his work is very, very romantic, right? Mm-hmm. When you think of a kink world, the idea that we have when we're outside of that world is that it's not very romantic, but it actually can be quite romantic, I think.
Yes.
And playful. The romanticism, you know, very playful.
I heard it described recently as it's cops and robbers, but the cops and robbers are fucking. You know?
Yeah.
You're just playing pretend. It's just make believe for adults.
Perfect definition.
Yeah.
So last year I got the opportunity to visit family back home, and he was gonna be in the same city as I was gonna be, in São Paulo. At the same time, so I emailed him and asked for the prices for the session, what could we be doing, and he was very lovely, answered me right away, explained what happened, how much long it was going to take, and I just let loose and went there.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a birthday present for myself.
Mm.
That was the whole thing. I wanted to, like, I always had so many problems with my self-image growing up, a teenager in the early 2000s, you know how it is. And we had so much problems with like self-body image, right? So I just wanted to do something that would kind of break that.
Mm.
And I just, in an impulse, I just message, and from that on, we were like, okay, this is the date. I want you to bring these colors of ropes. I want you to bring these colors of crystals, and let's do this.
Yeah.
And so we did it in my apartment back home. And it was maybe 2-3 hours of shooting.
Yeah.
And it was the most amazing 2-3 hours of my life, because when you put on the crystals, it's blind. It's like you're blindfolded.
Yeah.
So you can't see anything. I had to put on my complete trust in that man.
Yes.
That he would guide me through whatever we were going to do in terms of space, because we decided to do few shots in this kind of wall, a few shots in the bed, so like just in the couch. So it was like you just have to give yourself to somebody else basically because you can't move.
Yeah. Oh, it looks so cathartic, you know, like it looks so,
it's something
that I've become so like excited and fascinated by in my exploration with these different kinks is this idea of like, you know, from the outside, it looks, it can look aggressive. It can look violent. It can look, you know, but it's like, there's something really safe. And there, you know, when you're with someone that you trust so implicitly with such a vulnerable act, you know, and the connection that creates just the, like the peace, the clarity that comes out of those moments, you know, I'm really, it's kind of the next phase that I want to kind of start dipping my toes into is more of the sort of like binding and those kinds of things.
Oh, if only should.
Just to be like, put me in a womb, you know, like take me back, you know?
I feel like you're gonna appreciate it a lot. But for me, the experience was much more like getting to my own sexiness and my own body and feeling beautiful and sexy, even though I don't have what people would say a sexy body.
Whatever the fuck that means. Yeah.
Whatever fuck that means. But let's say like what we call back home, if you translate it, is a pattern body.
like a cutout pattern kind of thing?
Yeah, kind of like, you know what? It's kind of like pattern in the sense of the standard.
I gotcha. Yeah.
That's how we say it. It can be like a pattern, like everything like really cut and symmetric and blah, blah, blah. But it can also be like, oh, the standard of beauty is, oh, this person is a pattern. This person is like a standard of what people would consider beautiful or hot or whatever.
But it's like beauty and sexiness is like how you carry yourself to me. It's like how how you take in your own body and how you celebrate yourself. Like to me, it's like, that's like, you know, that's to me, I'm like, wow, you know?
And can you believe it took me 34 years to understand that?
Oh yeah. And I'm still understanding it, you know?
It took me making a photo shoot naked with crystals on my face, ropes around my body, making me immobilized to understand that it doesn't matter how your body feels, it matters how you feel. If you feel comfortable in your own skin, if you feel comfortable with just being adventurous. Yeah, and of course there are days that I'm still like insecure and oh my god, I don't like this. But it just opens your eyes for so much and such different things. Like, and I wish I could have the time to explore more of those things.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I think that people need to explore more in not only sexually, but like just internally, they need to explore more your own mind, explore more your opinions, explore everything.
It's almost like it's almost like you could almost frame it as like having a platonic love with yourself, you know, like the idea of having like a platonic friend. It's like, be a platonic friend to yourself. And, you know, obviously I'm somebody who's like, you should explore your sexuality. Like, absolutely, you should, if you have curiosities, like find someone safe and try it out. But if that's not your bag, that's okay too. But like you say, like just exploring why you think the way you think, why you feel the way you feel. And like, if there's something you want to feel, how do you get that feeling? You know, how do you get there?
Exactly.
And how do you allow yourself to celebrate that and hold that? Right. I'm really inspired by, I was really struck by those photos and I was really inspired by them, and hearing you talk about it, I'm like, oh yeah, no, I want to try this really bad.
And those photos are the most safe for work ever.
I'll bet. Yeah.
Those are the soft photos just for Instagram.
Yep. Big time.
Yeah, like I would say to you, like, explore it, try it, find someone that does Shibari and ask them to do it on you. Or if you really want to try it, like, find someone else for you to learn and do it at that person, right?
Well, and that's the other, you know, that's, yeah. Oh God, we could go, I'm mindful of the time. I'm like, we could go on a whole other thing about like the like fun of being the like top and the fun of being the bottom, you know, like, and there's, it's such a
Oh,
different
we can go. We
experience, you
still have
know?
time.
That's fair. That's
Look at
fair.
me. I'm the guest, and I'm just saying, no, yeah, we still have time.
Absolutely. But it's like, it is, it's such a different experience, but it's just as cathartic. And it's like, it's really fun to be the safe person, you know, to be the person who like is in control, but who is still a comfort, you know, like there's something really, really beautiful and intimate about that, about feeling someone trust you so deeply to do whatever, you know, and kind of like giving themselves up, right? And but then you taking on that responsibility is like a really, really beautiful act, you know? And I think it all comes back, so much of it comes back to like, especially like straight culture is so like product, you know, I always consider it as like product based, right? It's like get to the orgasm, I better come, you know? And it's like if you remove the product and you just look at the process and you just enjoy. And like maybe you come, maybe you don't, who knows? Like maybe you just enjoy an hour of play together and then you're like, oh, I'm tired, you know? Like those are
Yeah,
some of the best times.
I think that people have to just completely let themselves go of the idea that every time that you have sex, you have to come. I think that sometimes you don't even have to be, if you have a penis, you don't even need to be erect. Like, I think you can still be can still have pleasure in some other ways, like just by pleasuring someone, you can get pleasure from that, and
Big
not
time.
necessarily the both of you or the three of you or however many partners you want to have. You're not obligated to have an orgasm in the sense of like, I'm coming. You
And
know, like
also,
very porn like.
yes.
You don't have to. You just have to like be open into exploring and getting intimate. Because at least for me, like, I value intimacy way much more than sex per se.
Yes, big time. Same. I think building on what you said about not expecting, I think you know, there's certain demographics who probably need to hear this more than others, but like also abolishing the thought that you are entitled to an orgasm, you
Oh
know,
yeah.
I think that's a big thing to like immediately erase from your mind is that like, you know, sex stops when it stops being good for everyone, not when you come, you know, and I think that that's just such a fundamental truth that needs to be vocalized a little bit more often, you know.
Yeah, I think it started with our generation, but I think
Great
the
time.
generations that came after us, they definitely have that in mind way more, I think.
Big time.
Much more liberated, I'd say, sexually speaking.
I hope so. I mean, I haven't had sex with a lot of them, so I don't know, but you know. I
I don't think you should
was gonna say,
because
they're very young, so it's probably a really good
yeah.
thing I haven't. I was gonna say by very many, I mean any, but you know. Before we wrap up, I've only got one other question, but I want you, if do you have any other any do you have a last question you want to throw in?
No, you can throw it in your last question.
Okay, cool. Okay, then we'll just, you know, I've only got this one last. I always love ending the episode on sort of like a tip of the week kind of thing for listeners to try. But just before we really dive into that, I really do want to say, like, Eddie, I just like, I adore you. And I this has been
Oh.
so nice to talk to you. I like this is really the first time you and I have had a chance to just you and I talk. And it's really like, it really meant a lot to me that you reached out, that you booked an interview, you know, like I felt really special when you did that. And I want to say,
oh my God, of course. Like, it's a thing like for me when I was in the process of like talking to Taylor about us just going our separate ways, I was just like, but I still want to be friends with all y'all. I want to be friends with their friends.
Yes.
And I want to be friends with their significant others too, because everybody's so nice.
Yeah.
You know, like everyone was so welcoming, but I'm like, I feel like those people are great friends to have in my life. So of course I would help. Hello. That's what I believe you have to do as a friend. You have to help your friends.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. I just, I really did want to take a second and say thank you, because it's something I'm trying to navigate right now, is how to stay friends with, you know, with Sarah and I de-escalating our relationship, is like, how do I navigate staying friends with the others that I really genuinely want to, but it's a struggle right now, you know? And so it's a hard balance to strike. And, you know, and sometimes with certain breakups, like, it can feel like you're not just losing a partner, but you're also losing a whole network. And that can be really scary and really hard, you know? And
that's very true. Especially if you're being in a relationship for like a long time, it becomes way more difficult, right? So I completely understand. It's a problem. Imagine me, like, my first relationship in Canada lasted almost the same time that I was in Canada. So like when we broke up, it was like, okay, a sense of self, you gone. Lose it, right? Yep. Yep. Yeah. So it's always really good when people reach out and you're like, hey, you need a friend? I'm here for you. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you. We gotta go dancing sometime. I'm putting that up.
Yes, please.
Yes. Okay. We're gonna make it happen. Before we wrap up though, now that I've given you the runaround, let's get to this last question of, you know, as I said, I love giving listeners like a tip of the week kind of thing. So I'm curious, is there one thing you think listeners could try doing this week to be a better friend, whether it's to themselves or to the community around them?
Like, hug more people. I feel like people don't hug as much here, and it's something that I love doing. I love hugging my friends, but since I don't have as many Brazilian friends here, I'm always like second guessing if I can hug someone, you know?
Yes.
Just hug someone. Just hug more of your friends, hug more of your family. I think hugging is, especially in these fall times that we're coming into and winter times that we're coming into, people already get deprived of sunlight, so let's not get them deprived of a warmth of a hug. So if you can, always like go for that bear hug, you know, the cool. best one.
I love it. Thank you so much. Eddie, I just like, I'm glowing. I've been having without going into like gory details, I've had a rough day and I've had a rough week, and this has just like completely turned my energy around, and it really means the world to me. So thank you very much. Is there anywhere you'd like listeners to find you? Anywhere you like, do you want to plug anything or anything like that?
Not right now, but spring 2024, we do a exhibition of the Langara students. That's where I'm going in school. So spring, around second week of May is when we do that. So like, if you remember people, just come say hi. We're gonna have an exhibition with everybody that is graduating in the course, and just come see my work. It's probably going to be there. If not, just go to my Instagram. I'm not as active, but I do try to post sometimes I do try to post my art if I enjoy it enough to show people, because sometimes it can be very cringy you to just like, should I post it? Should I show the world what I'm doing right now?
The dilemma. the dilemma is real. I know it so well.
Yeah. Yeah. So my Instagram is z.edd.ie.
I'll make sure that's in the, I'll link it in the show notes for everybody to click. And I recommend the follow to everybody listening. Give Eddie a follow. He's an absolute joy. Thank you one more time. I'm literally going to stop recording and just burst into tears, because like, just like the feeling of like the energy shift in my body from this conversation is actually like, ooh, I'm like, it's really meant a lot to me. So thank you. Thank you very much for that.
Oh, of course, babe. Come here. Come for a hug, a virtual hug.
And that's it. Thank you so much to Eddie for coming on the show. It's episodes like this that make me absolutely love doing this podcast. Getting the opportunity to learn more about the people in my life, to hear their stories, and share my gratitude and my adoration for what they've meant to me. Please give Eddie a follow on Instagram. The links are in the show notes. And while you're there, why not give Friendless a follow too? You can also sign up for the now weekly Substack, where you're going to get updates about what's going on in my world, as well as the podcast. You're going to get a new fixation of the week, as well as a brand new Spotify playlist to listen to while you're waiting for the next Friendless episode. As always, don't forget to give the show a 5-star review anywhere you listen. It helps me out so much, and it would be super, super appreciated. And hey, is free. But that's it for the show this week, so let's just leave it here with a thank you, and I hope to see you next week with another brand new episode. But I'm not going to worry about that right now, and neither should you, because that is then, and this is now. So for now, I will just say I love you, and I wish you well. Fun and safety, sweeties.